And welcome to Tech Plus. As always, good to be with you. It's Jan and
Kane.
You sure that's your name?
I feel like I could have introduced myself better there.
Yeah, a bit more enthusiasm, eh? How was your week?
My week was good. I mean, the tech week. Let's not even talk about the tech week. The tech week has been absolutely crazy, from Netflix to our friend Elon to the sinking Titanic.
Oh, the Titanic is showing up
again. DSTV's back in our scope. And then we've got a lot of actual other updates this week as well regarding some electric vehicles, some quantum computing breakthroughs, and a new way to generate power with no moving parts.
You just said electric, so it obviously reminds me of the situation we are in again this week. How has it impacted you? We've had a lot of load shedding this week. I mean, we went up to stage 4, then 3, and then soon 2. And then hopefully it will end. So they're coming down a bit. But stage 4, did you see that? I didn't see that one coming.
A friend of mine in Cape Town told me that yesterday specifically he had 7.5 hours of no power. I mean, and the choice of timing is so weird.
The schedule is bad, but you know what? I always say, if you have a schedule, look, if you have to switch off the lights, at least, the very least you can do is stick to the schedule.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened this week. Because how many nights did we wait for it to go off? We hurry, we freaking run around and stuff to get ready for 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock comes, nothing happens. And then 8:30, it happens all. When was it last night? 10 to 9. So you're almost switching everything back on again. Oh, no, I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I think we're fine. And you just switch everything back on and boom, gone again.
I had a joke. I think it was yesterday, or it was the day before last. Obviously, the people that live with me in the house were like, yeah, it's going to be, you know, load shedding in T-minus 5 minutes. So I was like, oh no, you know, better turn off my computer, turn everything off. And then it was like 5 past and nothing happened. And I was like, I even told the other people, I was like, listen, if this power isn't off by 30 minutes past 8,
then you switch it back on.
I'm going to switch everything back on. I'm going to get back to work.
And then just
8:29, it turns off. Kenny's like, what?
You see, so why aren't they sticking to it? I mean, I'm grateful for the extra minutes of power, but please, we're planning around it. We're working here with deadlines and stuff. Isn't it insane? And then I got the strangest WhatsApp on the WhatsApp line here in studio. Somebody asking me to help them with their electricity meter. Apparently, I sent you the screenshot. Apparently, it's eating their electricity. I don't know what am I. I mean, we can do a lot at the radio station, but what are we supposed to do regarding your units? I can't give you units. Isn't it strange? Somebody asking me for advice, or not really advice. I kind of, please fix my meter. It's eating my electricity.
I can't believe. I mean, what could? I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes there's things in your house that can use a lot of electricity, but when your meter's eating electricity and you have 7.5 hours of load shedding, there's a big problem. You need to investigate. You need to lift some floorboards and find out what's plugged in.
Floorboards, yeah. But listen, Kane, I really think that for those listeners who haven't invested in any UPSs or inverters or power banks even, you really need to make a plan. Or you get these awesome LED lights with built-in battery at the foot of the little lamp.
Oh,
it's built into its components. So you put it into your light fixture, and while you're using it normally, it charges. And then when the lights go out, when it gets no power, then it switches to that little battery that's built in. And then you have light for 2 hours, which is basically your load shedding time.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Yeah,
I'd buy that.
I got one of the first ones. It didn't work so well. And I also didn't like the cool white light. I like the warm white light.
Yeah.
Because the cool white's so clinical.
Yeah.
But you get better ones now. They've improved, you know. So the little battery is built into the little base of your lamp. lamp. This little, what do you call those batteries? Iron?
Lithium iron.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. Good one.
So they how long do they operate for?
2 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it could be 2.5 hours. Obviously, as time goes by, the battery wears out a bit. But it charges while you're using it normally. So, yeah,
I think that's fantastic.
Nice.
I think the biggest downside of load shedding is sitting in the dark by candlelight or minimal lighting.
But who is still sitting with candles? I mean, there's so many solutions out there right now. At least, the very least you can have is an LED flashlight or something, or a rechargeable light or something. Or the torch on your phone. There's no need for candles. Unless you want to be romantic, eh?
Oh, yeah.
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 I can't say because I'm
romance
single.
And load shedding.
Ooh. Population is getting out of hand, eh?
But one thing that I was wondering, especially in regards to the load shedding scenario, is I don't think it's going to be stopping anytime soon.
Oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I was going to talk to you about that. You know, people say, no, just a bit more and then it's over. And then a month or two, we go with nothing. And then it comes back again. It's going to be with us forever, I'm telling you.
No, one does not simply go to stage 4 load shedding and say the problem is going to be solved soon.
No. Do you know how long we've had load shedding now in South Africa?
I would guess 3 years.
No, in total.
Of all time.
Since it started. The very first time it reared its ugly head in South Africa.
5 years
was
ago.
Was 14 years
ago. What?
Yes, and I double checked it. 14.
What?
1-4. So if you cannot fix that problem that you have in 14 years, how are you going to fix it now?
You know, when we go back in time and we look at like how people derive some of their physical and mental personality traits and things like that through the process of evolution, I feel like in 100 years from now, they're going to be like, South Africans, because of the load shedding, have some of the best nighttime eyesight in the world.
It's
like a genetic trait.
It is going to happen. It's going to come to that. Yeah, we're going to have super, super good night vision, you know?
We are the backup light.
But listen, let's just talk about the components as well. This week, I know of two people who lost electronic appliances because of it, and expensive appliances.
Same, yeah.
What did you lose? You?
Yeah.
What did you lose?
A screen. It was a 7,500 rand monitor.
Again?
No, that's the same one.
Oh, it's the same
still,
one.
Oh, it's I thought still it, taunts me to this day.
I thought it happened again.
No, thank goodness.
Like, no, Kane, come touch on, wood, it can't be again. But hey, this is insane. Anyway, so people losing components, and I said to them, you know, these things, even the power boxes, the substations, they're made to start up and run. That's what they want to do. So when you on and off the whole time, it wears out the components. They don't like starting up all the time again. It wears them out. And then that's why you have all these substations, especially in Joburg, just exploding. And then those people are without power. Like there's a suburb now, they've been without electricity for 7 days already.
Whoa.
Because their substation exploded. Because these things aren't made to switch on and off all the time.
No.
People have lost geysers even. This week, I know somebody lost a geyser.
Those are expensive.
Because of load shedding. It actually popped in his ceiling. So, you know, it's so bad for your appliances.
Terrible.
The best advice I can give you is invest in a surge protector plug. That's all I can tell you. And even that's not enough. You still need to run to those appliances and switch them off before load shedding.
Yeah.
And switch them on just 10 minutes or so after the power came back on. Because when the power comes back on, that's when you get the surge. Not when it goes off. When it comes back on, that's when you get that surge. Just enough to fry one of your components and it's gone.
Yeah.
And then you have to replace the whole thing.
Unreal, hey?
So be careful if you leave your TV and all those things on standby. Just run to the plugs. I know it's a lot of effort, especially if you live in a mansion. Better get the staff in the south wing.
Oh my word, exactly. But there is hope. There's green energy coming. We're going to talk a little bit about the electric cars, but there's been a breakthrough now where we've developed a heat engine with no moving parts. Now, a steam engine has moving parts, and that's how it generates electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an energy generation unit which has no moving parts.
Wow.
But it works with heat, and I'll explain to you how it works now. So a heat engine with no moving parts has been developed by engineers at MIT, and the National Renewable Energy Laboratory. Their new demonstrations show that it converts heat to electricity with over 40% efficiency, a performance better than that of traditional steam turbines. The heat engine is a thermophotovoltaic cell, similar to a solar panel's cells, that passively captures high-energy photons from a white-hot heat surface and converts them into electricity. The team's design can generate electricity from a heat source of between 1,900 to 2,400 degrees Celsius, or up to about 4,300 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, here's something interesting about heat. Did you know that cement is very difficult to manufacture because you need heats of, I think it's 2,000 degrees Celsius in order to manufacture cement?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
I heard such a thing, but there was an interesting initiative by a group overseas. They, or it might have even been in Kimberley, but what they did was they used their solar panels to reflect sunlight to one place.
Clever.
And that one place could reach temperatures of 2,000 degrees Celsius. So you have a renewable way of manufacturing something like concrete, and this is similar to that, but not really. So the TPV cell will be used in a grid scale thermal battery, according to researchers. Excess energy from renewable sources such as the sun would be absorbed by the system and stored heavily in heavily insulated banks of hot graphite. When the energy is needed, such as on cloudy days, TPV cells would convert the heat into electricity and send it to the power grid. With the new TPV cell, the team has now successfully demonstrated the main parts of the system in separate small-scale experiments. They are working to integrate the parts to demonstrate a fully operational system. From there, they hope to scale up the system to replace fossil fuel-driven power plants and enable a fully decarbonized power grid supplied entirely by renewable energy.
Nice.
It's a very big breakthrough in technology. We're yet to see it in a practical application. This is obviously all impractical. They haven't tested it on a proper grid, haven't tried to generate large amounts of electricity with it yet, but ultimately it's a step in the right direction of being able to generate renewable energy in a manner that beats that of something like a traditional steam turbine, which I think is very, very exciting. And,
yeah.
And another thing that I found very interesting was they mentioned, you know, that renewable energy from the sun, for example, would be absorbed by the system and stored in heavily insulated banks of hot graphite. Now, there's always these conspiracies about Egypt and the pyramids and them potentially being used to create energy and utilize that energy like an advanced civilization before our time. All conspiracies. But one thing that they used a lot inside within the manufacturing process was graphite and graphene. They actually had graphene tombs, like hollow tombs that they thought were for burying bison. But in actuality, it might not have been. And I just find it very interesting that the next step in technological evolution for power generation is utilizing a material the Egyptians used. That's quite, you know, that's quite something, considering they might have been extremely advanced.
Yes.
Absolutely. I see we've got our leaf blower back in town. I don't think the viewers, I mean the listeners, can hear it this time because it's a little bit soft.
But it means it's time for a music break.
It's time for a music
break.
But
listen, just before we do it, somebody sent me an article just now saying Eskom, it's a My Broadband article, saying Eskom used diesel with 626 million rand to prevent or minimize the impact of load shedding in the past 20 days. That 626 million rand of diesel is enough to fill a million Volkswagen Polos.
Jeez.
Woo!
A million VW Polos.
Yes.
And now we wonder why petrol's also skyrocketing.
Exactly. But there's good news on the petrol. I'll tell you after the music
break.
Let's
get to the break.
Okay, you just take your guest away. Here's a song by Pastille called Shut Off the Lights. We're referring to Eskom, of course.
Shut
Shut off the lights, buy Bastille, just don't tell Eskom that. they've been doing enough of that for this past week, my goodness. But anyway, it was very interesting. We were a bit in a hurry to escort somebody off our premises momentarily. But we have now removed what do you call him? The leaf blower, man.
The leaf blower.
Yes. And we were saying that Eskom's diesel worth 626 Rand. 626 Rand. No. Can you even fill a car with that? No, Eskom diesel worth 626 million Rand was used to prevent or minimize the impact of load shedding in the past 20 days. That is equal to full a million Volkswagen Polos.
That's so much that is being used. I mean, it's like completely doesn't make sense actually to sustain the grid with diesel if it's last 20 days, that's how much diesel
a million cars, man. A million cars. It's crazy.
But isn't it almost, I mean, I might be wrong because I don't know the specifics of this, of the math, but does that not mean that in the last 20 days we've had a million cars worth of more pollution coming from South Africa? They would burn that diesel.
You know
what I mean? That diesel's being used. It's
the
not
environmental
a
impact.
There's
would
an
be
environmental
the same.
Impact
even
in
worse.
As well.
Yeah.
By
good
not
point.
Having a sustained grid, we're actually influencing our environmental footprint in a negative fashion.
And what if that's the cause of stuff like the Durban floods?
Oh my word. Like, no, it's not good. We really
imagine.
Need to, I mean, as we said, it's been 14 years now.
No, come on, you've had enough time. But I've got good news for you.
I'm so excited.
The petrol price may be lowered in the first week of May. My God, we can drive again.
Yeah. I was getting tired of walking.
Me too. And Ubers and stuff. Diesel users may still face a hike though. Oh God, shit. Ooh.
Diesel is getting a hike.
With more than a week to go before fuel prices are fixed, the current data shows that 95 octane petrol is set to be lowered by around 34 cents a litre, 93 octane by 32 cents a litre, and according to current estimates, diesel will rise by between 75 and 81 cents. So Eskom's...
Well, I was about to say, nothing just rises without demand. And I think there's something that demanded a lot of diesel in the last 20 days.
Get all your torches. I'm seeing something really bad. And illuminating paraffin will also go up. So you can't even have a paraffin lamp.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's all going up by 68 cents a litre. But that's the mid-month data showing that. So it could still change. Petrol coming down, diesel and illuminating paraffin going up, unfortunately. That is the latest. So we can only hope for the best, eh?
We can only hope for the best. But I think as our next story, Netflix had a little bit of a hiccup.
What is happening with Netflix? Because when I think of Netflix, I think of this incredible brand that's doing so well and making so much money. And now you're telling me they're seeing a loss or something.
Well, I did some math to see how much revenue Netflix was making, and if I remember to, I'll get into it shortly. But Netflix Inc. shares are on a course to lose about $42 billion or $633.2 billion in value Wednesday after the streaming giant reported its first subscriber decline in more than a decade as the company pledges to make a slew of changes to its business to arrest a customer exodus. Shares in the company fell more than 27% pre-market trading, extending its plunge this year to 58%. Netflix has gone down 58% this year. The streaming service, if this loss holds, most importantly, Netflix is poised to become the worst performing stock this year in both the benchmark S&P 500 and tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 indexes. The streaming service shocked Wall Street by losing 200,000 customers in the first quarter, the first time it has shed subscribers since 2011. It also predicted it will shrink by another 2 million customers in the second quarter. And this was something that Russ Mould said, who's investment director at AG Bell, which I don't actually agree with his statement. He says, a big problem with Netflix is that it's too easy to leave the service.
Yeah.
But just between you and me, don't make it hard for me to cancel my subscription. It's going to make me very angry.
Yeah, you have to complete this puzzle thing first before you...
And I laugh because, you know, Investment Director says the problem is that it's too easy for people to leave. To save us from losing subscribers, we should make it harder for subscribers to leave.
It's this maze that you
Do
have to go through.
Do they mean practically or intrinsic value-wise? Because if make it harder to leave the service, meaning you have to sign this or sign that or go through 10 pages or request or whatever, it just it deteriorates the product.
Hopefully,
and it doesn't face the problem. The
hopefully you didn't mean it like that.
Yeah, I hope so, because subscribers are leaving for a reason, and it's not because it's so easy to leave. They're like, you know what, Netflix is actually so easy to leave, I'm gonna leave it today, you know, because I could just push cancel subscription.
It is quite easy.
So consumers feeling the pinch from inflation will now be looking hard at their expenses, and streaming service are a quick way to save money. The drop in customers has led Netflix to break some of its long-standing rules. It will introduce a cheaper advertising supported option for subscribers in the next couple of years.
Oh, no.
And will start to crack down on people sharing their passwords even before that. Analysts across Wall Street slashed their price targets for the streaming video company, while at least seven brokerages downgraded the stock. JP Morgan's Douglas Anmuth, one of the analysts who cut his recommendation on the stock, said he was encouraged by the company's intentions of creating an ad business, a model that has worked for Hulu and Disney Plus, but noted that it was still in early stages. Netflix's stock has suffered this year as the pandemic-era surge in user signups faded and investors had turned away from high-value technology and growth stocks due to rising bond yields. In comparison, the S&P 500 is down 6.4% so far this year, while the NASDAQ 100 has declined almost 13%. What Netflix actually came out to say was for the reason for some of the subscriber loss is it is because, and this is something I also don't agree with, they said one, it's because the because of the pandemic, right? Because of the pandemic, they weren't able to film, not being able to film a low volume of content, which is understandable. But that being said, companies like this, and I would especially hope so, are quite quite ahead of where we are currently. What we see isn't what they worked on this year.
Exactly.
You know? So obviously an error 2-3 years ago might only be showing up now.
Like it is.
And it is drying up. And another thing that they said, which is I almost completely disagree with, is they said because of account sharing. You know?
Oh, no, that sounds like DSTV.
And now they want to implement rules to stop this account sharing.
Same with DSTV, limiting you to only one person streaming at a time.
But when I see something like that, I feel it's greedy. Because
it is greedy,
it's like, let's say there's four people living in a household. Netflix wants every single person to have their own Netflix subscription. In an ideal world, that's what they want because it means more money. But to the household, it makes no sense.
And why are you allowing people to create profiles then on your Netflix account?
Yeah.
What's that for?
You can create 5 profiles. What, is it not supposed to be your names? Is it supposed to be like horror, adventure, comedy,
or depending on your mood or something? You're unhappy.
And they put profile pictures there, you know. What would be a horror profile picture rising around?
Oh my gosh. So that last one that really doesn't make sense.
It's a clutch.
But you know what? Yeah, you're right. But you know what? The people are picking up on it because, like on Facebook, Julie is saying, raise their prices. Their content besides the documentaries isn't good. It is taking forever for their better titles like Stranger Things. I've been a member of theirs since they first started with sending discs in the mail. Now that's a long time ago. I put mine on hold now as I could save money and get free movies at the library, or wanted to try any other TV shows on different services. And also Angela saying they raised their prices again and viewers are tightening their belts. Their shows productions were held up by COVID waves, deaths of staff and actors.
Wow.
I didn't even know that. Leading to a huge lack of watchable content. And they also seem to throw money at bad programming the last few years. Leaving Russia will also cost it another million or so subscribers by summer. Increased competition factors into it too. Because now they've got Disney Plus also to contend with here in South Africa.
Yeah, I did some math. Because I wanted to see, I mean, I was having a conversation with the people around me when I was reviewing this story. And one of the things that I actually said is, Well, how much on Netflix has actually been worth it for me for watching? So we went through Netflix's recent releases over the last year or two, and we kind of picked the few things that I liked, you know, Jupiter's Legacy, Ozark,
yeah!
Stranger Things,
Ozark, yeah.
You know, all these good shows that I really enjoyed. And I said, okay, well, based on the shows that I enjoyed over the last, let's say, 6 years, how much have I paid for that viewing experience over the last 6 years? And I calculated, now for half that time I was running with two accounts by mistake. I was paying for two, but I didn't calculate that. I calculated only on one subscription. I've paid 10,800 rand over the last 6 years for Netflix. And if you presented me with the question and said, would you like us to erase your memory so you can rewatch all these shows? It will cost just 10,500 rand. I will say, hell no.
Hell no.
Not a chance.
Same here, yeah.
And then I thought, well, how much has 200 million subscribers aggregated them in revenue over the last 6 years? And it was something like, I think it was 2,160 billion or 2 trillion 160 billion dollars. In the last 6 years. And then I said, sure, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money to have brought in revenue, obviously not with expenses, but to bring in revenue over the last 6 years. How much did it cost them to produce one of their best shows? You know, something with a lot of CGI.
And I took
a look at Jupiter's Legacy. And I saw that they initially needed a budget of $9 million an episode.
Cool.
It was $12 million an episode, but Netflix agreed to $9 million an episode. And there's obviously quite a few episodes. And that gives you an idea of some of their costs, you know, for the most expensive stuff. So they do have to put out a lot of money. But the sheer amount of money that they've made doesn't validate to me that you shouldn't have shows right now. Like, you should have been able to make a plan. We're talking about box office shows like The Avengers, you know, with like $340 million budgets. And you have $2 trillion over the last 6 years. Surely there shouldn't be that big of a bottleneck of content.
Yeah.
And if it is the case that, okay, well, COVID happened, we didn't have enough time to film and do all of this kind of stuff, well, then you haven't necessarily put out that much expenditure. Why are you raising your Netflix subscription cost?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a lot of questions. And it kind of, if Netflix was a South African company, I'd say it's corrupt.
Well, it can still be corrupt, but they will be in trouble here in South Africa because, as you know, Disney Plus is on their way, hey? And they're going in all in with the build-up to the launch on the 18th of May.
I'm very excited. I will be getting a subscription.
And they're actually doing, listen to this, they're actually doing something especially for South Africans. They're doing a special introductory offer for a year subscription fee at a 950 rand, which will be cheaper than the already cheaper annual subscription fee of 1,190 rand. So Disney Plus launching in South Africa on the 18th of May at a cost of 119 rand per month. Or the cheaper 1,190 rand per year deal. That's going to work out nicely if you do it per year.
Yeah.
How much will that be?
And 119. It's cheaper than
Netflix. It is. 1,190 divided by 12. How much will you pay then per month?
Have
you
got 1,190 divided by 12 is about 102 rand.
Okay, so then you'll save 17 rand per month if you pay in advance for a year.
But it's not too bad.
Yeah, it also looks like they're giving away a 4 month trial or something here. I just want to confirm that. You need to register your interest, by the way, on DisneyPlus.com.
In order to get access.
Yes.
I'm definitely going
to
do that.
And you will be able to have four concurrent streams, 4K quality for selected titles, and the ability to set up 7 different profiles. See, wow. It's already sounding better.
But they like almost pick at the competition's downside. You know what
yep.
I mean?
Yeah,
oh, their price is a little bit high, let's make it a little bit less.
Seeing the weak points,
you can have 5 profiles, let's make it 7. You know, it's like it's very well marketed, I'll tell you that much. Do you know what we're going to take a look at after the next music break?
What?
Elon Musk.
Yes, of course.
He's making an offer to buy the whole of Twitter.
Okay, the whole bloody company.
The whole thing.
Everything, the whole shebang.
From all the shareholders. And we're going to talk about how and maybe why he's doing that. And then we're also going to take a look at Tesla, who earned over $3 billion in profit for this year so far. And on this day, right, in 1997... So in 1997, on this day, the first ever space funeral launched. And we're going to talk about that.
The first ever what?
Space funeral.
Space funeral?
Yeah.
What? I thought I was mishearing you there. What on earth? Okay, wait. We'll talk about it after the break. We're going to listen to the band Walk the Moon now, who followed me on freaking Instagram this week.
That is crazy.
I was like, hey, no, this is a scam. And I clicked on it and everything, and I saw that was the verified account.
That is crazy.
And they only follow 100 and something people. So I was like, why would Walk the Moon, the band, follow me on my personal Twitter? I didn't even post much. Ugh, my personal Instagram, sorry. I didn't even post much, and I've only got like 200 and something followers. So I'm just curious.
That is crazy. I'm almost jealous.
Because my cousin said to me, you must frame it, that screenshot, you must frame it and put it up on your wall.
That's
and
clever.
Tell them that when Walk the Moon is following you on Instagram. But that's how it is nowadays, hey? It's an ego boost if let's be honest, it's an ego boost if a big band is following you on Instagram.
And if you had a YouTube channel in the background and was Walk the Moon and started following you, I'd be like, this guy knows his stuff.
Exactly. You know? Hmm, interesting. But here they are with another song of theirs. It's a new one. It's called Win Anyway. It's Walk the Moon with Win Anyway. I was so surprised, as I just said to Kane this week, when I saw that this American band is actually following me on Instagram for some reason.
Next stop,
and they're
Elon.
Still doing it. They're still doing it. Maybe it was a mistake.
Maybe, but it's like pretty hard to drop your phone in the perfect combination to like visit your profile and follow you.
Maybe they had a crack screen like your friend. So, Elon.
Yeah, the tech billionaire Elon Musk is reportedly willing to invest between $10 billion and $15 billion of his own cash to take the microblogging site Twitter private, media reports say. Musk, who disclosed ownership in Twitter in a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, earlier this month, has a 9.1% ownership stake in the platform currently, which is worth about $3.4 billion. Musk may also be willing to borrow against his current stake if necessary, a move that could possibly raise several billion additional dollars, citing sources the New York Post reported on Tuesday. The co-investors will combined have more equity than Musk, but he will be the biggest single holder, one of the sources was quoted saying. Nevertheless, it is mainly outside financing that will carry the bid for Musk, who has tapped Morgan Stanley to raise another $10 billion in debt against Twitter in the manner of a traditional leverage buyout. As first reported by the Post on Friday, however, the bulk of the money, about $20 billion according to sources, will come from co-investors who will finance a hostile tender offer directly to Twitter shareholders. Musk hinted at the hostile approach in a cryptic tweet over the weekend that quoted Elvis Presley's 1956 hit, Love Me Tender. Musk is planning to launch the tender offer for Twitter in 10 days or so. However, insiders say Musk appears to be having more trouble than expected finding backers. Musk announced that he had made an offer to buy Twitter. The billionaire is willing to pay $54.20 per share to buy 100% of the company. The all-cash offer will value the social network company at about $43 billion. He also acknowledged he was not sure if he would actually be able to buy Twitter, adding that there is a plan B if his initial offer is rejected. Meanwhile, Twitter has announced that its board of directors has unanimously adopted a limited duration shareholder rights plan following an unsolicited non-binding proposal to acquire Twitter by Musk. Musk is going for Twitter. He started with owning 9.1% and then he probably said, you know, it's 9% is nice, but you know what would be really nice? 100%.
That's what can happen. That's what you can do when you've got that amount of money.
I mean, I was thinking about just that. I was like, you know, these guys are living a completely different life. You know, they like Musk. Oh yeah, no, this. Let me just drop $15 billion of my own money into Twitter. Meanwhile, I'm here like, yo, that 100 rand I spent yesterday is hurting me still. You know.
But listen, that's insane. But you know, I think that he really, all in all, if you read in what he's saying and you see his past tweets and all these statements, he doesn't believe in limits. Like, not even the sky is the limit with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
So for him to purchase Twitter 100% of it is completely realistic. I mean, you know that he wants to go to Mars to create like a little town there.
Yeah.
And he wants to take people with, and he says everybody can afford it. If you start working now and saving up money, then you can go with him. He says it is doable.
That's crazy.
But he said that life on Mars won't be luxurious. It will be cramped, difficult, and hard work. So why would I want to go then?
Be one of the first. Maybe you can take an NFT selfie.
I don't want to. No, you can go, Kane.
Well, you know, Musk also made a post to Twitter, and he said policies for like a social media platform are only proper when the top 10% or the 10% on the far left and the 10% on the far right are equally unhappy.
I saw that.
That's what he said. And I was like, well, it's kind of true, you know.
That is true. But he even weighed in on the Netflix thing, eh? He said Netflix is losing subscribers because the woke mind virus is making it unwatchable.
Whoa.
The woke mind virus. You know, all these people who say they woke.
Yeah. And he said that about Netflix.
He said that. He says that's why they're losing subscribers.
Yeah, because, well, it's like...
Is he wrong?
Some of the content on Netflix, I'm not even going to talk about it. Some of it is just so terrible. So here's something very, very cool, right? So on this day, the 21st of April, 1997, was the launch of the Founders Flight, which was the cremated remains of 24 people were launched into space in the first ever space funeral. One of those people was Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek. Other notable cremated people on board included the physicist and space exploration activist Gerard O'Neill, the German rocket scientist Kraft Enrickel, and Timothy Leary, a psychologist who became famous for his research on psychedelic drugs. These people's remains were sent into space via a company called Celestis, which charges thousands of dollars for these memorable space flights. It only launches a small sample of the cremated remains because launching all of it would be way more expensive. The company's first mission was named the Founders Flight, and it was air launched on a Pegasus rocket. The capsule containing the remains orbited Earth for about 5 years before burning up in the atmosphere. What a cool way to go. You know?
Especially if you have interest, like most of those people had interest
like the
in space.
Like Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're floating around there becoming space dust.
I thought that was really cool.
But when you said before the break, when you said a space funeral, I was thinking coffin and everything in space. And I was like, how are you keeping him in there? Is he not floating out?
No, that's crazy. And then, do you know what? This is also something that is really, really cool. I think this is really cool. So, an ancient Namibian gemstone holds the key to future quantum computing. Now, this is going to go a little bit on the technical side, but bear with me here, because this is quite a phenomenal finding.
Okay, I'm bearing with you.
So, a special form of light made using an ancient Namibian gemstone could be the key to new light-based quantum computers, which could solve long-held scientific mysteries, according to a new research team led by the University of St. Andrews. The research conducted in collaboration with scientists at Harvard University in the US, Macquarie University in Australia, and Aarhus University in Denmark and published in Natural Materials used a mined copious oxide Cu2O gemstone from Namibia to produce Rydenburg polarizations, the largest hybrid particle of light and matter ever created. Now, this is still sounding very technical, but let me tell you what a Rydenburg polarization is. The Rydenburg polarization switch is the Rydenburg polarization switch continually from light to matter and back again. In Rydenburg polarizations, light and matter are like two sides of a coin, and the matter side is what makes polarizations interact with each other. This interaction is crucial because this is what allows the creation of quantum simulators, a special type of quantum computer, where information is stored in quantum bits. These quantum bits, unlike binary bits in classical computers that can only be 0 or 1, can take any value between 0 or 1. They can therefore store much more information and perform several processes simultaneously. This capability could allow quantum simulators to solve important mysteries of physics, chemistry, and biology. For example, how to make high temperature superconductors for high speed trains, how cheaper fertilizers could be made, potentially solving global hunger, or how proteins fold, making it easier to produce more effective drugs. So this is the kind of things that can be done with this technology. But it was found, they went onto eBay and bought this Namibian gemstone from eBay.
From eBay?
And then conducted the research.
Oh, my word. Okay,
so it goes to show that sometimes something you just wouldn't see value in can hold unprecedented technological opportunities.
Yeah.
And I thought that's really cool. A couple of scientists came together, bought a gemstone off of eBay.
On eBay. I didn't even think that's where they got it.
Made a breakthrough.
Yo.
That's so cool. And the breakthrough is something that goes between, goes from matter, physical, tangible matter, to light.
Yeah.
And back and forth. That's mind-blowing. I thought that was just crazy.
That is crazy. About. I didn't even know about the eBay thing.
Yeah, no.
That was a bit of a shock to me now. You see, anything is possible. Like, anything goes in 2022.
Exactly. And also, here we have something cool. So BMW has unveiled the Electric 7 Series. So we spoke about Audi coming out with an electric series. We spoke about other car manufacturers, and now we're talking about BMW, who's just unveiled
and Mercedes
theirs.
As well, hey?
Yeah,
and they look so beautiful, very classy,
stunning cars.
Yeah,
and you know Lincoln.
Yes,
Lincoln also released an electric vehicle, and I got it. As soon as I finish this aspect, I'm going to tell you about the Lincoln vehicle because that's crazy. Okay, so BMW long tried to bill its flagship 7 Series sedan as the more fun to drive alternative to similar offerings from Mercedes-Benz. As the rivalry goes electric, the German manufacturer is trying to also win over people sitting in the back. The i7 unveiled on Wednesday boasts a luxurious interior that includes a flat screen lowering from the ceiling to entertain passengers in the rear. In the rear, they also get more legroom because BMW made the car longer and wider, and the company plans to deliver the model, which starts at €135,000 or 2.2 million rand and offers 625 kilometers of range. It's bigger than before and has more exhilarating entertainment you'll see in luxury cars, said the CEO Zipsy. It is the greatest offer BMW has ever made to the rear seat compartment. So unfortunately, they're a little bit late to the party. The Mercedes competitor has a range that's about 75 kilometers more than the BMW, but ultimately they're just trying to make the intro into the market. They're just trying to get some of that market share. So BMW will be coming out with their 7 Series, and then Lincoln new electric car concept just came out that uses lo-fi beats and fragrances to elevate your state of mind.
What?
We're going to talk about it right now. Listen to this. This is crazy. So do you know who owns Lincoln?
No.
Ford.
Oh, okay.
Owns Lincoln. So Ford makes Lincoln and obviously Ford vehicles.
Yes.
So this is obviously Ford's luxury brand.
Yeah.
So now we can get in the mindset luxury. Everything must be luxury.
Yes.
It's not over the top. It's luxury.
Yes.
Says it will release 4 new electric vehicles by 2026, by which point 50% of its global sales will be electric vehicles. The company also revealed its Lincoln Star concept as a way to introduce new design language that will come to define its upcoming electrified lineup. And what a concept it is. Carriage doors, a front that extends out like a drawer for added storage. Like, imagine the bumper of the front of your car coming out like a desk of drawers.
My word.
No, like, we're talking weird, weird stuff.
Yo.
A full suit of sensory interior moods and a sleek aerodynamic profile that feels more Faraday future than Ford. The Lincoln Star concept is designed to be the ultimate sanctuary for wealthy elites who prefer to be chauffeured through the teeming metropolis of the future. Lincoln has been mulling plans to electrify its portfolio for months. The company had hoped to work with buzzy EV startup Rivian on an electric SUV, but was thrown off those plans thanks to the pandemic. Later though, Lincoln considered introducing at least 5 new battery powered SUVs through 2026, according to a report in Reuters last February. That includes battery electric models to replace or supplement some of their other vehicles. That appears to be slightly pared back in this current iteration. 3 new fully electric vehicles by 2025 and a 4th by 2026. Lincoln also notes that it recently reported its best annual global sales in 21 years, up 7% over 2021. The company says it plans to build on its momentum with the recent launches of the all-new Zephyr in China and the new Navigator in North America. This particular model is also meant to excite customers about what's coming down the pike. The automaker claims the concept will use design, light, displays, scents, and sounds
to create an immersive experience for clients. That will include three distinct mood settings that combine digital graphics, lighting, and a variety of fragrances to help transport passengers in a calmer state of mind.
Wow, okay.
Do you want to hear what some of these mood settings
it's
are?
It's all going to be calm till the thing crashes, but anyway, let us hear about the moods.
The first one is Coastal Morning. It uses gentle oceanic sounds, a fragrance of sea mist, and the soft, warm glow of the sun with dynamic lighting throughout to replicate a stroll on the beach at sunrise. You got Mindful Vitality. That's the other one. This is meant to re-energize the senses with invigorating upbeat audio, dynamic abstract artwork, soft glowing lighting, and a flowery fragrance. And then you have Evening Chill. Mirrors Dusk, using a calming night soundtrack, coordinated with night sky video and an evergreen fragrance.
Get out, Kate.
I hope these fragrances don't expire.
I was going to say, can you have all three at the same time? Or what if something goes wrong?
So this is literally a car, and I must show
can
you
something,
a
can it malfunction and spray in your face or something?
Take a look at the car.
Can it malfunction and spray in your face? And some, ooh. Yeah, but it does look like something from a
it's luxury.
A space movie, luxury. Eh?
To give our viewers an idea of what to expect,
it's beautiful.
Looks like a big SUV. Very, ooh. Very minimalistic design.
Oh, it's stunning, actually.
The doors open towards the front and towards the back, so you can see the passenger seats at the back and the driver's and passenger seat in the front by opening both the doors. There's no metal in the way like a traditional car has two doors, you know.
This is not the picture I had in my mind while you were describing it right now.
No.
Looking at those pictures, it looks much better. But I don't know about that mist and all that stuff sprayed in your face, eh?
I don't know how it will correlate. I mean, I think it's cool that they decided to create an atmosphere. I'd love to drive in this car. I think it looks absolutely beautiful as a concept car. Sometimes the concept cars don't quite come to, you know, the physical world just as they hope.
It's very, very modern and slick.
It looks so
stylish.
Nice. I'll tell you, if I got picked up in a car like this, or I saw a car like this driving past, it's electric, it's sleek, it's like an SUV sport model, its rims are fantastical.
Which mood would you choose?
Which mood would I choose? I don't know. This I would. It might be the Dusk, where it mirrors Dusk using a calming night soundtrack coordinated with a night sky video.
Yeah, I don't want the sea mist. I think that's not going to smell too nice.
No, and this is an evergreen fragrance, so maybe it's like a field of something.
Like you said, hopefully those fragrances don't expire.
No! Or like someone pranks you, stuckers. But I would probably go for the evening one, because I like the idea of getting in a car and you have like a starry night.
Yeah, I like that one as well. I'm taking
nice
that one.
And dark and
same. Yeah,
I would choose that.
Same. Yeah,
but I mean, you can expect this car to cost a lot of money. I mean, the company Ford is basically said that they expect to spend about $30 billion on electric vehicles throughout 2030. So they're putting big, big, big money in here. And this is one of the first really exciting looking luxury vehicle styles. You know, Lincoln isn't known for, you know, like being a sports car. It's very luxury. It's like Alfa Romeo kind of aspect. And it'll be really nice to see this kind of vehicle be real, but also be available commercial. Some of those features might be nice, you know, internal lighting in your car. I'd love that sounds so cool. Being able, I mean, everybody uses an air freshener, so the idea of scents isn't so out there, but the idea of programmable scent, where you can actually program a scent to fill inside of your car. It can be a new car smell, or it can be whatever, and you just push a few buttons and it goes. I love that idea. That's a really cool
idea. But obviously people will abuse it again.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah. Like people find a way to like make like weird smells, you know.
Yeah, or a sleepy thing that puts all your guests asleep in the back of a car.
No, I'm out.
And then kidnap them. You see, I'm thinking ahead, yeah.
No, that is crazy. But that kind of sums up the majority of our updates for today, other than one which was quite crazy, which is Airbnb is suing an owner or the host of a Pittsburgh party. What actually happened was they obviously hired a house, an Airbnb house, then decided to throw a party.
Of course.
And when I first heard about this, I thought, you know, maybe there was a couple of people there, 10, 20, 30 strong. You know, it can't be too bad. There were 200 people
In one Airbnb. How big is it?
Well, I can't imagine it's not small.
Can't be a little cottage.
But then something happened. So obviously things might have got heated. Things might have got out of control. And ultimately there were gunshots that were fired.
At least 50 gunshots
that were fired inside the house, which left 2 dead and 8 injured.
Oh my word.
And Airbnb has now turned around and said they're going to sue the host of this particular party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually right. I mean, one time I stayed in an Airbnb, and that night that I stayed at the Airbnb, I got robbed stickers.
I remember. You told me.
And it was like a complete clean out. You know, all laptops, all phones, everything was gone. I was in the house.
They took Caton's tech.
Yeah, and I messaged Airbnb, and I was like, you know, what can we do? No, there's nothing we can do. But it's nice to see that they actually step in sometimes.
Shouldn't there be some kind of insurance policy when you rent with Airbnb for the owner of the house and for the guests?
I think that if the house has been robbed, and it should be on the onus of the property owner, the person who put the house on Airbnb, who enabled such an unsafe environment.
Should be a secure place, yeah.
And even if it is secure, you know, it had an alarm system and everything like that, and I got robbed. But it just shows you have to be careful. Just because you're going to an Airbnb doesn't mean you're void of all the other problems.
Of course.
That you would have in your own house. But yeah, be careful of where you go and parties and things like that, you know. I mean, apparently, and the real reason I wanted to bring this up is because there's actually some policies on Airbnb that I didn't know existed, such as there's a curfew on noise and parties of 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. So if you rent an Airbnb, you may not be allowed to have continue your party past 10 p.m. Otherwise, you're breaking the rules of Airbnb.
Like the party animals are going to watch the clock.
Yeah, and I think
because by that stage they're already so wasted they can't even see the clock anymore.
Dude, like 10 p.m. the party hasn't even started.
Exactly.
Yet.
Who starts that? you're only getting the thought of a party, but it only starts at midnight.
But if you do happen to have a party that does happen to be over 16 people, because that is the limit, you're subject to a $500 fine.
Okay. How much would that be in South Africa?
7,000.
Not that I'm planning a party.
About 8,000 rand. So if you happen to be in South Africa and you do happen to go to Airbnb and you do happen to have a party that you didn't ask for permission for, you can be fined for $500.
And what about the damage to the furniture and everything?
Well,
and with the shots fired, I'm sure there's a lot of holes in that place now.
Yeah, well, 50 holes to be exact, I'm sure.
Yo,
no,
that's a robber party.
I mean, if I owned a house and I rented out an Airbnb and I heard that there was a 200 person party and there were gunshots, I'd be like, oh my God.
I would sell the place.
Yeah. You sell it now, though. You
just patch up the holes.
It goes from an Airbnb house that's turning over good money to a murder scene.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like the ghetto.
Jeez, that's hectic. Shows you got to be careful.
Yeah, but I also want to know, you know, because obviously they do like safety checks on Uber drivers. So are they also doing these same checks on Airbnb hosts? Because you can still rent from somebody dodgy.
Yeah, well, I could have an Airbnb account, go to a party, host, go to a house, stay at the house, host a massive party, get banned from Airbnb, create another account, go book another house.
Exactly.
So how are they going to enforce such a rule?
Yeah.
And also, I rent a house on Airbnb, I have a party, they say you weren't allowed to have a party, here's a $500 fine. I'm not going to pay it. Okay, you're not allowed to use Airbnb. Okay, create a new account and use Airbnb. I don't know what they could do.
But can you split the fine when what's it, $500?
Yeah.
What if you split it between your 20 party guests? Then it's payable.
I think as long as Airbnb gets paid, they're happy. I don't know how much.
So just say, hey guys, we had a party. Everybody's paying.
Your entrance fee. We got 500 people coming. $1 entrance fee. We're good.
Yeah. Jeez, interesting. Wow, what a show today. I think it was packed. It was packed, man. Today's show was really packed.
Absolutely.
It was more eventful week than last week, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe last week I was just asleep, I don't know. But it's awesome. There we go. That's another edition of Tech Plus for today. As always, Caton, thank you so much for your contribution and your wonderful presence and fountain of knowledge.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much to all of our listeners for listening in as usual. We'll see you next week for another Tech Plus. And ultimately, have a great weekend.
You too.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, Caton.
Bye-bye.